Good morning to everyone at St. George's Church this morning. We're broadcasting from St. John's Convent on Botham Road, a few blocks away from you. Wish I could be there in person, but it's not possible at this time. So this is one of those Sundays when I could easily preach a long homily about any one of the readings, but I won't. I'll just preach one homily, and I hope it won't be long. The passage from Isaiah is full of hope in the midst of tragedy. The Spirit of God sends the prophet to proclaim good news to the brokenhearted, to captives and prisoners, to those who mourn, to those who would rebuild ruined cities. And Isaiah might add, if he were alive today, to those who are on the front lines caring for the sick with COVID, to those developing an effective vaccine, to those supporting the bereaved, the frightened, and the homeless. In the midst of all of that, the good news that the prophet speaks is very much like Mary in the Magnificat. How much he rejoices in the Lord. My whole being shall exult in God, he says. Psalm 126 is also a song of rejoicing that God is coming, literally, and comforting, literally strengthening. That's what the word comfort means in its original Latin. Comforting the Israelites as they return to their homeland after generations of grief and sadness and mourning during their exile in Babylon. They sing with all their hearts, the Lord has done great things for us, and we are glad indeed. Paul's letter to the Christians in Thessalonica has the same joyful quality as Paul encourages the Thessalonians to rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances. And then he adds, do not quench the spirit. Do not despise the words of the prophets, but test everything. Test everything. In the context of all these passages of joy and thanksgiving coming out of the midst of grief and tragedy, we are told to test everything, to discern what is of God and what is not. And that is where the gospel passage about John the Baptist fits in. John the Baptist gets a lot of visibility during Advent and then rather fades into the background until later in the gospels when we hear of his death. But now, here in Advent, when we observe this waiting time for the coming of the Messiah, John is stage center. He is Jesus' cousin, but has a very different life and a different role in God's plan. He's a lot like the Old Testament prophets, like Isaiah and Jeremiah and the others. And he's often called the last of the prophets. Isaiah and all the other prophets point forward to the coming of Jesus the Messiah. And John is the very last of those who prepare the way for Jesus, someone who actually knew him. And must have been a little bit nonplussed at the idea that his cousin could be the Messiah. Nevertheless, he knows. He has tested. However he has discovered God's plan in Jesus, he knows. And so he's preparing the way for Jesus and preparing the way for people to understand who Jesus is. And in relationship to Jesus, to know who they are. And I think that's really at the heart of the gospel this morning. In knowing who Jesus is, John knows who he is and who he is not. The gospel passage from last week, which also focused on John, was from Mark's gospel. Today we hear about John the Baptist from a different John, another gospel writer, John the Evangelist. But when I say John, I'm going to try to say John the Baptist or John the Evangelist so we don't get the two mixed up. John the Evangelist, the writer of the fourth gospel, And this, John, gives us a little bit deeper understanding and insight into the mission of John the Baptist. Everything about this passage is about testing the spirits, discerning who Jesus is, and also thereby who John the Baptist is. And typical of John the Evangelist, it's presented as a dialogue, a question and answer test that's aimed at getting to the truth of who Jesus is. The Pharisees you might think of as the bishops of Jesus' time, the Pharisees sent a delegation of priests and Levites. They would be the clergy of Jesus' time, to question John while he is baptizing on the far side of the Jordan. Who are you? The delegation asks. John the Baptist does not answer directly. Instead, he says who he is not. I am not the Messiah. What a strange answer to a simple question. Who are you? I'm not the Messiah. Then what are you? They ask him. Are you Elijah come back from the dead? No, he answers. No. Then who are you? They ask, sounding exasperated that he won't answer them directly. He says, I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, make straight the way of the Lord. He describes who he is by saying what his call is, what his mission is. They keep pushing him, and finally, John the Baptist answers, I baptize with water, but among you stands one whom you do not know, but John knew, the one who is coming after me. I am not worthy to untie the thong of his sandal. John has set the stage for the appearance of Jesus, the Messiah, and he keeps himself in the background. So we can imagine that the priests and Levites go back to Jerusalem and report to the Pharisees that John is definitely not the Messiah, that he is a prophet announcing his near arrival. But the dialogue between the scribes and the priests does a lot more than just show the delegation who John is not. It shows them also who John is. And in doing that, John states and perhaps comes to a huge realization for the first time who he is and his role as a scout, a prophet, one who prepares people for what is truly holy by helping to cleanse them of their sin, of all that may hold them back from recognizing the Messiah when he comes. This raises the fascinating question for me of how I and each one of us comes to know who we are, what we are called to in life, as well as how we learn to know and trust who God is. So I want to tell you a story that may help to illustrate this, how this can happen. It's a story that was told a few years ago by one of the brothers of the Society of St. John the Evangelist in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Brother Jeffrey Tristram. And Jeffrey tells this story. I was told this true story, Jeffrey said, about a Jesuit priest called Father Francis Brown. In April 1912, he received a present from his uncle, a first-class ticket for the maiden voyage of the Titanic. It was just for the first leg of the voyage from Southampton to Queenstown in Ireland, where he was to get off and carry on to his studies in Dublin. During the voyage, he was befriended by an American millionaire couple, and he had a wonderful time being wined and dined by them. They also told him about how exciting New York City was. As they came in sight of Ireland, they said to him, why not stay on board and come with us all the way to America? We'll pay your way. Wow, I could do some ministry in New York, the priest thought. This could be my vocation. So he telegraphed his superior in Dublin requesting permission to stay on board. His wise superior quickly saw that this just didn't sound right. This man had no special gifts for ministry in America, nothing in the past which suggested that God might be preparing him for this kind of ministry. He was clearly dazzled by his new friends. And rather than a call from God, it was, as St. Ignatius would put it, an enticement from the enemy of our human nature. So the superior telegraphed back four words. And Brother Jeffrey says, I've seen a copy of the telegraph. This is true. The telegraph from his superior simply said, get off that ship. And he got off very grudgingly. But of course, in a few days' time, he was very grateful to God that he was saved by his wise superior. Now, his superior had no idea the Titanic was going to sink. That wasn't what his wisdom was coming from. His wisdom was coming from his realization that this whole idea of going to New York was not in keeping with how God had already been calling this priest, with everything that the superior knew about his gifts and what he was called to. He knew it was a temptation. Even without being saved from such extraordinary disasters, we have all had experiences, I think, when a wise friend or teacher or parent or elder helped us discern what we were really called to do because they knew us internally so well. We were close enough to them that they could see what the path was that God was calling us to often before we could see it. I told this story from Brother Jeffrey a few weeks ago in my class on the Rule of St. Benedict, and I asked the students to think of a time when someone had helped them see who they truly were and what God might be calling them to. It was amazing the stories that the students told. Learning who we are always happens in reference to who other people are. We don't learn about ourselves by being hermits. We learn about ourselves in community. We learn who we are and who we are not, and what our true integrity is. Self-definition is as much about realizing what we are not called to do as it is about listening with the ear of our heart to what God is calling us to do or to be. It has a lot to do with being obedient to the call of God on our lives, whether we are called to be mechanics or parents or monks or clergy or business people or window washers or artists or whatever. And that call from God comes from who we are as people. God knows us more intimately than any friend or advisor could possibly know. And so we listen with the ear of our heart, the ears of our heart, to what God is saying to us. What we do, what our role in life is, needs to come from who we are. It needs to be consonant with who we are, with our personalities, our gifts, with who God has called us to be. The doing has to come out of the being. And that call to be always present to the voice of God in our hearts is related to who God is and to who we are in relationship to God. That, of course, is what John the Baptist is discovering. We are not our own little gods. Our societal values are not our gods. Our human relationships, as wonderful as some of them may be, are not our gods. We have only one God, the God who came to earth in the humility of a vulnerable baby. And there is not one of us who is worthy to untie the thong of his sandal. Our role is to listen and then respond. And in Latin, the word for that is obedire, that is obedience, to be obedient. Not to some earthly God, but to God the Messiah. We discern our path, our call, when what we do is consonant with who we are as persons, with the desires and gifts that God has placed in our hearts. So as we look forward to Christmas, to our celebration of the birth of that tiny, vulnerable human being who was the Messiah, let us celebrate our own humanness, our own gifts, our own call from God, and stay on the path, even if it means getting off the boat, even in times when everything seems hopeless, to stay on the path God calls us, to recognize who we are by knowing who God is. And then we will say with joy, the Lord has done great things for me, and I am glad indeed. Amen.